Hello, everybody. Welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. 10, a little shutdown. Week 9. Hope everybody is staying safe and sane and balanced and all that good stuff. I'm here upstate, sheltered, and joined by my tremendous co-host, Jamal Murphy. Murph, what's happening?
What's up, Bill? You know, same old, every day's the same. Still here, sheltered in place, trying to maintain great family time with the kids. I can't complain about that. So there are some positives. I say,
great family time.
Yeah.
And holding it down from Harlem, USA, I think, is Aaron Mathewson. Aaron, what's going on?
Hi, Bill. It's so good to be back. You know, it's just super gray outside, so just trying to keep my spirits up.
I know. And then, of course, our special guest and great friend of the program, spectacular play-by-play broadcaster, the great Sims. Dave, join us from Manhattan. What's up?
Yes, indeed. Good to see y'all. How's everything? Good to be with you all here as we all shelter in our respective places. It's pretty crazy, man. This is Groundhog Day every day, right?
Yeah, seriously.
Every day. Seriously. That sounds like a gift. Every day is Groundhog Day.
Seriously.
Oh, my God. So, so how's everybody doing, Murph? What's that? I just saw you the other day.
You know, we socially distanced. We both had the masks on. I got the lighting structure from you. That's why I have more light in the room now, for those paying attention to previous podcasts.
There be light.
Yeah, let there be light. No, but everything's good, man. You know, the draft last night was interesting. It was a nice, nice little getaway from reality. That's the way I took it. We don't know when games will be actually played on the field. But this, to me, felt like kind of a fantasy draft. Everyone's excited. It's not fantasy because it does matter. These kids will eventually end up playing for these teams. So it is real. It was a nice form of entertainment, at this particular time. And I'm sure the NFL got great ratings from it.
Well, yeah. Dave and Aaron, did you guys watch the draft? What'd you think about it?
Yeah, I had it on, and great drama in that, you could do mock drafts till the cows come home, but it was a live event. A lot of people cared about it. It's consequential. And, a little bit of mystery to it. So you didn't know who was going to go where, what kind of trades were going to be made. I'm an Eagles fan, being born and raised in Philly, so I was pretty pleased with it. They got a wide receiver from TCU who looks like he can he has some explosiveness to him. So that was pretty exciting. And then I think the rest of it, I'll just keep it on for background noise.
What'd you think about the big story? We knew Joe Burrow go number one to the Bengals. I'm not sure. It's hard. You don't really know. There are no sure things, especially in the NFL quarterbacks. But the big story to me was Tua at 5 and whether Miami would take him. We knew he had the injury issues. We knew prior to the injury, he was a sure bet, number one pick. What did you think about Miami rolling the dice there?
Well, from what all the guys were saying in terms of culture-wise, given that they had passed on Drew Brees years ago when Nick Saban was there, they were not going to make that same mistake again and take a shot on this kid, because when Tua has been – when he's been healthy, man, he's been as effective as anybody on the college stage in the last few years. A smart kid, and he makes all the throws. So I thought it was a good pick. And the other thing, what tickled me that I'd forgot – I think I knew this, but I'd totally forgotten, and it hit me on the screen – when they did a live shot to when they were talking about the Miami Dolphins, I'd forgotten they have a black GM and a black coach.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Totally forgot that. I went, oh my goodness, that's right.
So
right.
Much blackness.
One of two.
Yeah. No, I mean.
I think he's the only one. Mm-hmm. But we're making progress. Aaron, did you watch the draft?
I watched part of it because I teach on Thursday nights, but I was wondering about the Dolphins. I was like, someone's going to take Tua. Like, he's good. I think he's young. He's going to recover. I was really fascinated by all the hubbub about Jordan Love and what Aaron Rodgers is going to do. I would feel a little slighted.
only brother gets drafted, and everybody's in an uproar. You know,
I know, right?
You know, it's absolutely ridiculous, Bill. It's ridiculous because Aaron Rodgers, you know, he's 36, but, you know, he's not a decrepit 36 by any stretch of the imagination. He's one of the best quarterback competitors we've had over the years and among the best of, you know, you could make a case for him being the best of his generation. You know, he's not going to shrink from this. And he was following Favre. So now, and he knew this was eventually going to happen to him, that somebody was going to be on the doorstep ready to take his place. I think he'll be a pro about it.
Right. What is he supposed to do? Wait till he's like 50 and then like draft somebody? Wait till like he used to never get hurt. Now he started to get hurt a little bit. We've seen Pat Mahomes take his team to the championship, to the Super Bowl. We've seen Lamar Jackson be the MVP. We've seen Deshaun Watson. We see, you know, the handwriting Russell Wilson, like one and a half Super Bowls, almost two.
Yeah, right. You know,
it's almost, they're like, it's in denial. And what Green Bay is saying, they're basically saying that this guy could be the heir. We're not drafting to be the backup. We are drafting him to take your place.
Right.
It just seems like a lot of people, man, are just like, no, what are we going to do?
I don't know why anybody's losing their head over this. I mean, it's the right of succession in the NFL. And it's not like when Bill and I were kids and you'd see these great black quarterbacks coming out of HBCUs or the occasional Power Five, and you know this guy's going to be destined to be a DB. No. Jordan Love's a quarterback, right, man. He's going to be a quarterback. He's got the skills. They're putting a faith in him. And the fact that, you know, he's gonna be backing up a Hall of Fame quarterback. If he's smart, he will just go in there with, you know, ready to be a sponge. And then when he gets his opportunity, like Rodgers got his, get a chance to shine.
Right. The only other side of it is that Rodgers, you know, there's a stat that people were talking about yesterday and today, that the Packers have not used their first round draft pick on a skill position player to help Rodgers since 2002. That's the last time they
took a long time.
A skill position player, like a wide receiver, running back, to help him out. And they were one game away from the Super Bowl last year, and they definitely lacked on the offensive end. So they could have really addressed a more important need, I think.
But they addressed it. All of their wide receivers have been second round draft picks anyway. All those guys, Devontae Adams, Randall Cobb, they're all second round picks.
And it's a deep draft for wide receivers. There's going to be plenty to shop for and a lot of quality too.
But they were saying, we better get this cap because if we don't, New England will. But let me ask you something else though. You know, the fascinating thing and stuff is you go into people's houses. And you see your family.
Did you guys see Cliff Kingsbury's house?
Oh, that was beautiful.
Palatial. With the big fireplace?
Yeah.
The fireplace, yes, with outside.
With the glass, the all glass windows.
It's like,
you know.
Really, yeah, 20 foot high ceilings?
Yeah, right. I'm like, you watch the other shit and say, what have I done wrong?
Well, those coaches get paid, man.
And then
you see the brothers who are getting drafted. You know, and it's right. Like clearly a tale of two cities.
Oh my God. I know when some of the shots from like the deep South, some of the cats from LSU and Alabama, and you know, they're going to be supporting their families. And, you know, they come from, to say the least, humble beginnings. And hopefully these young men will prosper, stay healthy, and beat that league average of, you know, time in the league as an active player and make some money and not get screwed like Scottie Pippen, which we found out in the last dance last week. Yeah,
which we will talk about a little later, no question. And, you know, speaking of that, with the NFL draft, and, I mean, Bill, you always talk about this, you know, it's really like winning the lottery for these kids, for the families. Yeah. You know, so there's, you definitely, I mean, most of the time, the most excited people are the people in the room other than the draft.
The people around them.
Right.
I think you mentioned that. It was very interesting, you know, because I guess we're older, so we've seen this story before, and everybody they're going to be supporting. And if you could fast forward 10 years,
Not even 10.
8 years now.
Speaking of Chris Klingsberg, I mean, I thought about that when I'm watching him in his, you know, tremendous estate that he lives in or whatever. But one of the things I thought about was, you know, this guy, Cliff Klingsberg, is one of the coaches who got a job last year, which over, you know, some qualified black candidates like Bieniemy and so forth. And that just shows you it'll, you know, that type of wealth comes along with that job. So it just brings it to light even more about the inequality in terms of who's getting those jobs. We know, you know, Cliff Kingsbury hasn't done anything yet. You know, that's fine. No young coach has done anything yet, but it just brings to light, you know, how big a deal that is to get these type of positions.
Coaching has become welfare for white coaches. And it's been like that for, well, that's what it is. You hit it right on the head. This is like handing down, you know, this little locked circle of wealth to these white coaches. I mean, it's such a division of labor is just so stark in the whole sport, the whole draft. And even, you know, it's just more you think about it, man. You just, you know, just got, and then, you know, on top of the coronavirus, and that's exposed on steroids, the haves, have not. Just the thing of just phenomenal wealth in this country. All the people immediately going to the Hamptons, to the third and fourth homes. I don't know what you guys think, whenever this is quote unquote over.
Right.
Will this stick? Will people kind of be looking at haves and have nots? And man, you know, how are y'all making all this phenomenal wealth on our backs? Even white people have got to be thinking that. You know, you have got to be thinking you're on a plantation too.
Bill, just for some context, I just pulled up this Forbes article, and it looks like in the 80s, like the average salary for a coach was like $295,000, and now coaches are typically pulling in more than $6 million.
Mm. Right.
And I just pulled up online the picture that's running all over the media of Kingsbury's home shot from looking out into the mountain. It looks like a...
It's beautiful.
It's spectacular. Holy Toledo. I wonder what that thing goes for.
And then Jerry Jones was on a yacht, right? Jerry Jones had...
That was a yacht he was on?
That's what I heard.
That's what it was. He was on his luxury yacht. Yep.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, yeah. It's unbelievable. You
know? Here's something on the flip side a little bit. You know, of the top 10 picks in this year's draft, five of them were represented by black agents and agencies. Hmm. The second and third pick were represented by Clutch, who's LeBron's guy, Rich Paul. He represented the second and third pick. Rock Nation, your boy Jay-Z, he had a couple of draft picks. And Young Money, who's Lil Wayne's agency. But the main agent is a black woman.
Nicole Lynn. Yeah. Oh, wow. Tremendous. She was in there too.
Yeah. So five of the top 10 overall picks
were
represented by black agents. Great. So that, you know, I mean, that's a positive
progress, story. Man.
The lesson of all that kind of stuff is that you just have to keep grinding. That's been our lot. That, you know, because you go back to 1922. You know, I mean, I'm just pulling up, but where our grandfathers and grandmothers. And no, but what they did just kept grinding.
Hey, man, that's keep on keeping on. Was that Fannie Lou Hamer said that? And that's what you have to do. And you mentioned 1922. I mean, I was in a conversation the other day talking about being in the business I'm in. And I thought back and I think about this all the time. My father and my two grandfathers, who I knew, he figured what you were just talking about, 1920, 22. Nowhere in the world they had thought that the four of us would be sitting here doing what we do and the careers that we've had. I mean, so there has been a lot of progress, and would I like to accelerate it? Heck yeah. But things have come a long way, man. Really have.
I was just going to say, Nicole said in an interview with Jemele Hill that when she goes into places, sometimes people still think she's just a girlfriend. Like they don't even think that a black woman, and she's very pretty, would be an agent. And she has to be like, no, I should be here. Just do that more.
I can see that. I'm sure people, you know, when people saw her at, you know, she was at the house of, I forget who the draft pick was, but he went 10th overall, a lineman. But, you know, I'm sure people thought when they saw her in the house with him, they just probably thought she was a relative or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know?
It was an auntie coming over, an auntie coming over.
Which one was this?
This was the 10th overall pick. Was represented by Nicole Lynn, who's an agent for Young Money.
Oh, Jedrick Wills? Money. Was it Jedrick Wills?
Huh? Yes, yes. Before we move on to the last dance, just one last NFL note. I got to give a shout out to a Brooklyn bred kid, went to the same high school I did, Poly Prep, Isaiah Wilson, offensive lineman. He was drafted 29th overall, first round out of Georgia to the Tennessee Titans, and he had one of the funniest moments of draft night caught on camera. Where I don't know if you guys saw this, but his girlfriend was laying on him.
Yes.
was laying on him right when the cameras are on him. The girlfriend, well, not laying on him. She's like hugging him. Congratulating him when the cameras were on when he got drafted. And he's like in a daze. And his mother physically moves her off of him.
Like pushed her out of the camera.
Oh, I got to look for that.
And the dynamic was even crazier because you know, he's black, she's white. His mother goes over there, physically removes her.
What was his cat's name?
From his lap. Isaiah Wilson. It's going around. In fact, I'll look for it right now.
And he just looked like he had his hat on and he just like is looking down.
I don't even think he knew actually what happened. I think he was such in a day because he wasn't really a lock first round pick. So I think he was so happy.
But what happened?
He wasn't paying attention to any of that.
I didn't see that. So what happened? I mean, what did the girl do? He just like,
because you know, they show about a 10-second clip of it. So we don't know what happens after. But she was physically removed. Like, she was on his lap hugging him.
Pushed.
And the mother was like, you could tell the mother was trying to talk to her something for a second, and then she didn't respond. So the mother physically raises her up from her shoulder, from, like, her armpits, moves
her. This is the kid from Georgia.
Isaiah Wilson. Yep.
Yeah, big kid, Minnesota Vikings, yeah.
Yeah, 6'5",
you know what?
If they get married,
You may be able to remove me from the lap, but you ain't gonna be able to remove me from his life.
we'll see. You know, I was wondering what the girl's mother thinks.
Oh, I know.
This is such. Forget him. Everybody's thinking about this economic impact on their lives.
Right.
You know, you're gonna get married, then you're gonna get divorced. She's gonna get half. You know. You know.
Can we also talk about the production? Like, so. Like, basically, so much was happening from Bristol because ESPN was putting on the draft. Roger Goodell is in his basement. He's announcing all the picks. Like, basically, the whole show was going into people's homes. Like,
the
original draft was supposed to be super glitzy. It was going to be in Las Vegas. There's going to be boats and who knows what else. And I mean, this is still quite complex. And I was really impressed.
Check this out. I found the video. I don't know if you can see it through the camera, but
I just saw it. I just played it on my phone.
Share your screen.
Watch this.
And there's a poly. The girlfriend's wearing a Poly Prep. Yeah.
See. she was not trying to move.
Wow.
So you know that was.
Don't forget that.
What can you say? What can you say?
What can you do? Let's move on to the NBA. The Last Dance, that's the other big distraction going on now. the Last Dance on ESPN, the first two episodes were shown last week, Sunday. Episodes 3 and 4 will be on this Sunday. You know, what was your take on those first two episodes? You know, it was, 20-plus years ago? It brings back memories. Michael Jordan, you know, most people think is the greatest of all time. Pippen, as Dave mentioned earlier, it was really, you know, brought to light, you know, how underpaid and underappreciated he might have been. What was your take on the first couple episodes there, Dave?
I thought it was tremendous storytelling. I'm not one to bow down at the mere mention of Michael Jordan, but I have tremendous respect, obviously, for his supreme talents. I mean, I was there, and I used to do the Knicks. I used to be the host on Knicks Radio. 86 to like 92, and I got to be right there next to the visiting team bench. So I saw him up close and personal a lot. And you know, we could debate till Cal's come home who's the greatest of all time. He's certainly right there and probably right at the very top. I'm still a Kareem guy, given when they take the overall picture of his high school, college, and pro and the impact he had on everything. But in terms of the optics, if you will, Michael Jordan, my God, I mean, it's hard to beat that. And I thought the storytelling was great. Jerry Krause, I know he's since passed on, but boy, that didn't work out for him, man. He came across really badly. Michael was killing him all the time.
Right.
Michael's totally loyal to Phil. Scotty got screwed, and there's a lot of funny things in there. So I wasn't going to watch it. Next thing, my son came down, he was watching it. And I sat down, and it was great to know that it was 2 hours.
Right.
I got such a kick. I was like, oh, I need more of this.
Right.
So I'm glad that they're running it in 2-hour blocks for the next 5 weeks. And I'm actually looking forward to this week. But again, they had a whole LeBron, you know, Michael, Kareem. It's just wonderful entertainment. It really is.
Bill, did you see it?
I did. and you know, but it's, you know, but it's, what's funny, you know, Dave, the class, my class of kids that you spoke to, they really had turned on Michael. They didn't like the fact that he was a bully. They didn't like the fact that he was disrespecting Krause. They didn't like, it's funny how they said, you know, the guy, somebody said, he really is, they use a word like, they say he really is a dick, you know.
I mean, hey, top of the line. Top of the line in that category, Bill. And that's one of the things that makes him great.
Right.
Like it or not, that's what one of the things that makes him great.
Right, and you know, Kobe was this, you know, took after him.
You same can thing, see Kobe mama mentality. Him. Yeah,
you know that was from Michael.
They said Kobe eventually became a little more of a human being,
you know, after he finished playing. But George, you talked to cats that played with and against him. He was the same. I mean, he took the carbon. You remember carbon paper? He took the carbon paper from Michael and ingested that sucker.
Right. Question for you guys. Did the same thing that happened to Kobe happen to Jordan in that he got nicer and like became an evolved human being after he left?
I don't hear that.
Not so much.
I don't hear people about Jordan's warm and fuzzy.
right. Yeah, not so much. And I think, you know, Jordan, you know, I don't think he received as much criticism for that type of behavior because he was the original. You know, I think a lot of people felt like Kobe kind of was imitating Jordan in a lot of ways, trying, you know, and it worked, you know.
Tongue out and everything.
Yeah, I mean, it worked. He became a great player, cutthroat, and he accomplished a lot. But yeah, Jordan, I think this documentary is good for the younger generation. You mentioned LeBron, people talking about LeBron, Jordan. I think this is good for those people who never really saw Jordan, because I just can't, you know, I mean, LeBron is great. I think I would put him in my top five all time, LeBron already. But I mean, Jordan was just, he didn't have, you know, where LeBron had that little choke moment against Dallas and didn't get it done. Jordan didn't have those. He lost.
Well, he got his butt beat by Detroit.
But they were playing football.
Right. Well, those are the rules. The Knicks in the 90s. Nobody's complaining about that. They took the page right out of that same book.
Right.
And he did not. He did not have the supporting cast. And LeBron had even less of a supporting cast
that
year he won with Cleveland.
Right.
He had way less than what Michael had. The other thing that's going to be interesting is they tease this program, this week's installment. The practice episode, and I've heard Steve Kerr talk about it, where he punched Steve Kerr in practice.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, I mean, you know, everybody, Michael Jordan. I mean, he's just a man like anybody else. He's
right.
Not some saint that's walking on the cloud with a, you know, walking around with a halo. I mean, excuse me, but he could be a prick. I mean, flat out. And that's one of the things that made him great, too. And he, you know, and he always needed something to focus on. And Kobe went the same way. Hey, man, if you, any kind of slight, he took it. And that was his motivation. And, you know, the heat of a million suns, man. And then, boom, 63 points in your butt.
Right.
And he's still, those are the realities, man.
And he still is probably a prick. You know, one of the interesting parts of the documentary, you know, talking about Pippen and how Pippen was underpaid. And part of the documentary described Pippen, or Pippen said it himself, that he decided to have surgery later because he was like, F that. You know, they didn't treat me well. Why am I supposed to look out for them? I'm going to get my surgery during the season, come back at the end of the season. And still to this day, Jordan's up there saying he felt Pippen was wrong and selfish for doing that, where usually, you know, teammates usually stay out of that kind of stuff and are like, you know, you're supposed to understand where that player is coming from.
Yeah, but here's what Michael said. We are the best 1-2 combination maybe in the history of basketball. Basketball, maybe the history of sport. And you're going to put that, our run, our line of success, you're going to jeopardize that because you're pissed off at management, which they were doing a bad deal. Don't get me wrong. But I think that's what Michael was thinking. Hey, man, we got a great thing going. There's that, the Batman Robin, however you want to qualify it. I mean, having been right at courtside and seen it, arguably the best combo back that's ever been in the league.
I guess what did Ryan Zor say? He told Scotty, if you sign this, don't come back. You know, right. If you sign this contract, right. He said, I think you're underpaid. If you sign this contract, don't come back.
Jerry's a CPA from Brooklyn. He knew what he was talking about. It's a bad contract. What are you doing? I mean, here's the owner. He's more than willing to pay it. So, and I understand when they did the backstory with Scotty, came from, you know, less than prosperous conditions with a big family.
Right.
And he took, and that was guaranteed money, and he thought that was good. But if he had, you know, if he had stood his ground, I mean, you're not going to be an idiot and let Scotty still in his prime and let him walk. That's not going to happen. All he had to do was stand his ground. And if, and the worst comes to worst, he said, yo, Mike, I need some help here. And he goes in with Mike. Boom, done. See you later.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. And I mean, and Pippen, you know, I don't feel bad for Pippen. Like, I don't look back and feel bad about the situation. You know, Michael was underpaid also, you know, up to a certain point. And then he cashed in big time. And then Pippen, in the documentary, said, hey, or, you know, previously he said that, you know, my time will come. When they asked him about it at the time, he said, my time will come. And it did come, because when he went to Portland and Houston, he was making $14 million a year for about a 4 or 5 year stretch. So he got paid.
Ergo, we don't have to throw any benefits for him.
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly.
What about I think there's a marriage. Somebody got half his estate.
Oh, well.
But he's still doing well, Bill. He's still, you're right. he's still doing well.
He's doing well.
What did you guys think about the part where Michael's talking about his dad and how he was trying to, you know, he was competing kind of with his brother for his dad's attention. And it was such a nice sight to, because, you know, it was such a tragedy with Michael's dad. So to actually see him was great.
Well, it was pretty good. Yeah. It's good to see that family dynamic. And, his mother's a rock, man. She's, and the old man sounded like he was as well. And super competitive, you know, a bunch of brothers. That's pretty typical.
What did you guys think about when they got, of course, the racial part? A couple of things, a sneaker comment, Harvey Gantt, and I guess you have to just accept it. I mean, like, okay, you're right. This, you know, that's who you are. You know, move on.
I've heard people, you know, about the Republican comment, which became part of his story. And there are people who still say that comment has never been authenticated.
But he said it was a throwaway.
He said
that it was a throwaway comment. I guess on a buzz was a joke. Hey, Republicans buy sneakers too. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so he didn't say he never said it.
Mm-hmm.
He just said it was a throwaway. And then they were talking about when they wanted him to support Harvey Gantt. And he told his mom, well, you know, I don't really know him. And, of course, he would make a financial contribution to the campaign, but he didn't do what Gantt probably needed. Well, Gantt, I'm sure, needed the money. He needed Michael Jordan to come public and say, hey, this is my guy. Keep some of the money, but just give me your embrace.
Right. He needed Bill, to your point, needed the photo op along with the dollars, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Which would have been even bigger. And that's where you want to compare him to LeBron. I think LeBron does more in that sense. You know, he's less afraid of being political. Maybe that's the times. Who knows? Who knows if LeBron's, if the 80s were a different time than you know, now, politically, and the way people thought about it, you know, maybe you could give Jordan an excuse, maybe. But LeBron is different LeBron in that sense.
Yeah, and he saw Jordan kiss
right,
he so also, much
right,
heat
right.
About being neutral. He said, hey, I ain't going to be that guy.
and it's the same time that OJ is also right, coming. Right. He's up, and he's not saying anything either.
Right, OJ, yep.
Yeah, I remember him.
So let me ask you a question.
We talk about the draft and the NBA. Do you think the ratings are sky high just because we're on a lockdown? Or do you think, on its merits, the draft really is a novel way draft and the documentary was good. Do you think it's because we're like sheltered in place and just hungry for like kind of anything?
That's the overriding ingredient for sure.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing live going on. And again, it's the Last Dance is compelling, man. And if you didn't see it, you want to go back and watch it. And if you know a little bit about it, you want, hey, tell me more. And that's where I am right now. I mean, I'm looking to Steve Kerr. I've always admired Steve Kerr. And when he talks about, hey, I saw the headline the other day, I got to go back and read the story. But he said that changed a lot, a big dynamic on the team when Michael punched him in practice, and it changed the way they played and they galvanized them. They went on to win a championship. I like hearing those kind of inside stories. And the fact that that we're shut down. I mean, I'm supposed to be, I think, I'd be playing in Texas right now. The Mariners would be, tonight's support would have been a start of a 3-game set in Texas. I don't have that. So we got the draft and he got the Last Dance. That's all we have right now.
Yeah. And I'm not a big NFL draft guy. Usually, yeah. I don't usually watch the whole thing. I watch, you know, like you said, I used to have it on in the background, but yesterday I was like, hey, let me dig into this and see what's going on. There's nothing else to do sports wise. Let me figure out what's going on here. Let me do some research on these players, all that stuff.
We were talking about this too, about the technology. And this is sort of a technology haven for everybody to think about the possibilities of this. We're entering the Madden, the NBA 2K. I mean, we are entering a virtual thing where this is going to probably become more the norm, where we're going to have to create this ambiance. And people are looking at this, and we'll probably look back at it, that was a rudimentary thing. But yeah, wow, what we can do with this, what we can create to make you think you are there. You're watching a competition, you may actually be a better experience. And if you were there, they say, wow, this is really...
I don't think there's any question on the precipice of that, Bill. That's even before this happened, there have been, you know, we've all seen stories about that type of stuff and how big virtual reality is. In terms of what you're talking about, I think you're right on the money. I really do.
Well, and Bill, you heard about the NBA just signed that huge multi-year contract with Microsoft. I mean, they still have a contract with ESPN, I think, for a few more years, but it's all direct to consumer, like expanding their digital stuff. So I think it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, gaming has been huge. You know, now esports, you know, even in the last couple of years before this was taking off in terms of people actually willing to watch people play video games. And, you know, I was looking at businesses that are absolutely taking off. Most businesses are hurting right now, but the few businesses that are taking off, and, you know, one of them is gaming, you know, it's just skyrocketed. Alcohol is the other one. So,
of course. Well, those are, between golf and esports, that's really all that can be playing right now.
Right.
You know? Right. No question about it. But, you know, also, I don't know what you guys think about this. Dave, you mentioned it before. Even a lot of players are bemoaning or lamenting the fact that they're going to be playing without hands and all, it's going to be terrible and all that stuff. But then I was thinking, you know, we talked about this before. You know, Steve Kerr, I mean, Jordan hit Kerr in practice. There were no people there. There were no fans there. There's an intensity that goes with practice. Dave, you've seen it. The fans almost added a superficial thing of show business to it, but I think the essence of competition, like in baseball, your first exposure is in practice trying out for the team. Mm-hmm. Practice is where you earn your stripes. And there are these unrecorded moments of where somebody, they get into fight, they curse each other out. Now to monetize it, to say now, you know, it's the sort of, only difference is that, but there are going to be millions of people watching you virtually. So, you know, Dave, it's like when you're in the studio. It's like being in a studio, but you know that there are millions of people watching you, even though there may be three of you in the studio.
Well, I learned that when I was doing radio back in the day. I mean, yeah, there's, when I was doing WNBC Sports Night at night, you know, once it gets dark, you know, 7:30 to midnight when we were on straight through, we're on 38 states, 50,000 watch. You're darn right somebody was listening. I mean, we get calls from Michigan and the Carolinas and all up and down the East Coast. Yeah. So, but in terms of motivation, if that's what you're addressing, will they be motivated if by chance it gets to a situation where you do play games without an audience, believe me, there's so much pride involved with these guys that they will be maxing out. They won't have the same juice because of the noise and the ambiance, the atmosphere of being in a game, which we're totally used to. But I tell you what, let a guy get buzzed inside. You watch that, you know, watch somebody get dig in a little bit and pimp his way around the bases if he hits a home run or something like that, or give him a fist pump if he strikes somebody out. Believe me, if we do get to that point, I don't think energy will be a problem. It's just a matter of, you know, the lifestyle. Nobody wants to be away 4.5 months away from family. Quarantine. And basically it would be get up in the morning, maybe do a little stretch or something in a hotel, get something to eat, get on the bus, go to the ballpark, play the game, get on the bus, and go back to the hotel and have that for X amount of time.
Yeah, no family. Can't be around any family.
I'm not, and they don't want you to go to bars and whatnot. They probably will not want you to go to bars and restaurants.
You can't. You can't. Because if there's one person that you know gets the disease, you have to shut it down like you did last time. You know, everybody's – and it's not just the players. It's – you know, the trainers, the employees,
guys like
of the me. Team. Yeah. Media, you know.
Well, to all of your points, Magic Johnson said the same thing. He was like, yeah, it's going to be hard at first, but once they get used to playing without fans, they'll be fine because you played without fans on the playground. So he thinks they'll
That's
be okay.
fair. That's fair. And as long as the checks come in. Okay.
right. And I was talking to Solomon Wilcox, the announcer, the NFL announcer, and he made a great point saying, you know, when you play, your whole thing with the fans, you're trained to block that out. You know, so not only will you get used to it, when there are fans, you pretend there aren't fans. You know, so
there,
I mean, they're
still
used
is
to
nothing like the roar of the crowd, man. And when you know, in the NFL, you know, when warm ups start, and if, even the stadium being half filled, and the O line comes out, and the wide receivers come out, and you know,
but
so,
I bet you can manufacture. They can manufacture that. You know, you can manufacture ambiance, noise, this or that. And again, remember, if we were raised in that situation, it's funny, look what we're doing now. Human beings, we adjust. With lockdown, we adjust. If it's going to be this without fan, adjust. So right now they're talking about, they were, like you said, once the checks start rolling in, you know, and there could be, and the advertisers can say, wait a minute, we're going to probably have more eyeballs, you know, than ever. What do you think about this? Just a step further. Eventually, going to the stadium will be like a luxury. So now you
pretty
will
much
pay premium.
Is right now, given the prices you have to pay for parking and whatnot. I mean, I go to one, the last couple of years, I've gone to one NFL game. It cost me X amount of dollars to go from New York to Philly. I don't have to worry about parking, but yeah, the ticket price, and God forbid you want a beer or something. And that's, you're right. You're 100% right.
Yeah, so to be allowed in your suite. And again, it gets back to this whole thing of the haves and have-nots. Now, going to the game will become a status symbol that you could actually go, because we're not going to have 19,000 people to guard anymore. It could be like 4,000. 4,000 spread out in luxury that you've not seen. You know, very luxurious. The super wealthy will be in what are the old suites, right? But then the kind of wealthy and connected will be spread out in the, you know.
I would say that's not out of bounds.
Well, you know, speaking of that, you know that the MLB is being tested, or the MLB employees and some players are being tested for antibodies now. So I guess hopefully if we find out that you're immune to this, maybe we'll let people back in. I don't know.
A lot of testing has to get done, though.
Here's a problem. And it goes back, accrues to black. Now, they're saying now they're going to test people to see if you got antibodies, to go, who gets to go to the restaurant? Well, you know, they've already established that black folks, that the pandemic is hitting black folks worse than anybody. So when it comes time to hand out who gets to go to the back to the restaurant, they go, well, you know, black, I don't know, because y'all are twice as likely to carry this shit. So you're going to pass one to get the passes to go back to the restaurants.
But you know, wait, you know, Georgia is reopening nail salons and restaurants like this weekend. And I bet you it's black folks who will be at those salons.
Oh, please tell me no, but I hear you. Bowling alleys.
And bowling alleys. Who the hell's going there?
Tattoo parlors, barbershops. Beauty salons. Yeah. Time out. Come on. Oh my God.
Even POTUS 45 had the guy walking back. Wow. I don't know that.
Well, I drink some Clorox, you know, drink some bleach, you know.
Once again, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Audible has over 180,000 book titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. For you, the listeners of the Bill Roden on Sports podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. We highly recommend that you check out the classic $40 Million Slaves, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Black Athlete by the one and only William C. Roden. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/Bill Roden on Sports. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Bill Roden on Sports. For your free audiobook.
The Olympics are, like, you know, it's supposed to be postponed to 2021, but I'm hearing that that might even be pushed back further.
Of course, yeah.
Well, that's absolutely, I could see that happening. I mean, again, we got a lot of reliance on the scientific folks to come up big and come up big quickly. And the likelihood of that is not great. So that's a realistic possibility. And you should be ready to accept it too, at some point.
Hey Dave, what's the deal with in baseball? Are players getting paid, or are they going to have to do what the NBA players are giving? Must I give money back?
Far as I know, they are getting paid. I could be wrong on that, but I know a lot of employees like that work for, you know, folks that work at the clubs, administration people like that, there could be some issues on that coming up as we move forward.
You know, one player who's benefiting from the pandemic is Tiger Woods. He gets to hold on to his Masters title for like several more months because it's going to be in November, hopefully.
I actually watched that rewind a couple of weeks ago. I'm a big golf fan. I like to love to play. And last year when it was live, we were getting ready to play, I want to say the Angels. And the sight for me, and I kept thinking back to my dad and grandfathers. Every time we had Tiger up, they had the broadcast up on a big screen. We got on these mega video boards, right? And there were a few guys who were taking, you know, voluntary BP. But every time Tiger came on, it was a drive or a putt. Everything stopped. And then when he holed out on 16, 17, and 18, people were cheering. It was a small crowd. It was only 11 o'clock Pacific time. But that was one of the coolest moments I've ever seen in sports. And I'm thinking, who would have thought that seeing all those white folks going absolutely berserk at Augusta and all around the country in ballparks watching this guy on one of the great comebacks we've ever seen in the history of sports. And it gave me chills to watch. I watched most of the rebroadcast a couple of weeks ago, and I saw a lot of stuff I didn't see before. As a golf fan, it was great, man. I thought it was really well done.
You're right. That's still one of the great comebacks of all time. And it's so funny how Tiger has just come all the way back, because it was just, you know, to be so high and to fall so far, to see somebody climb back like that, you know.
Redemption, baby. You know, you've written a million redemption stories, Bill. So, I mean, this has got to move right to the top. And I know from playing a lot of golf and being – 9 out of 10 times, the only homie, depending on what golf course I go to. But I know there's a lot of white golf professionals and a lot of cats in pro shops. I've spoken to them over the years. They are thrilled that they said the TW, big TW is back, because it helps us all make money.
Oh, man.
Yeah, he's the only one I can watch.
Well, that's just like with Venus and Serena. To me, that's tennis. Mm-hmm.
We talked about The Last Dance, and we're talking about Jordan and LeBron. I got you know, some people here, different generations, seen different players. I want everybody to give me their top five, five guys. Right?
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Oh, man.
Got, NBA.
NBA top five, sorry. NBA top five.
I got to go Bill Russell, Kareem, Jordan, LeBron.
Four.
Kawhi.
Oh, what? Kawhi, okay. So that you got a guy playing right now. You're gonna put him right in there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll give you mine while you guys think about it.
I got mine, and this could change in about 30 seconds. But as we speak, you got to go with Mr. Russell because he's the ultimate winner in the history of American team sports. Michael, guy named Oscar Robertson.
Great. Right.
Karl Malone at the power forward and LeBron as a combo 3-4. But at 30 seconds from now, I could say Will, Kareem, Jerry, Isaiah. Right. I mean, there's a million guys to choose from. I mean, it's amazing the joy and the arguments that question raises, man, because he could be here all day.
Yeah. No, I'm going to go, Kareem. I'll go Kareem, Michael Jordan, Bird, Magic, and LeBron.
Okay.
But you're right. You know, I'm leaving people out.
I didn't see
Wilt. You know, I didn't see Russell.
That's my guy right there, boy.
West. You know, those guys, I didn't see.
I saw all those guys. Hey, Clyde Frazier's got to be in there too, man.
Let me ask you what I think what might be even more challenging.
Give us. Don't try to escape the question. You got to give us the five. Five.
Well, Kareem is to me. Kareem is one, just because.
Right. That's fair.
Yeah, because I think that if you go Kareem's whole thing of winning from high school all the way up, he's got Russell, and made him change the rule. You know, y'all can't, as long as this Negro is playing basketball in college, y'all can't dunk. Now, when you do that, that means when you force to change the kind of rule, okay? Right. And then I go Kobe Jordan, and the other two, you pick them. You know, those three, then you pick them because that's Mount Rushmore. But let me all ask you this. So I'm inviting the four of you to this competition. It's going to be the most rigorous competition that you've ever, ever, ever been involved in. I can't tell you the rules. I can't even tell you the competition. I'm just saying you better give me the five baddest motherfucking athletes in the history. Stock your team with the five killers who are going to come to this competition, to come into this alley fight. You don't know the rules. You don't know anything except you need five bad MFs. And one has got to be a woman. Start with Jamal, then Aaron, then Dave, then me, and we'll name our five like that. You cannot duplicate who you're going to take.
Can't duplicate. Blind I'm glad I get to go
first.
I thought I go first.
Well, no.
No, go ahead.
Okay, Jamal. You go first, Jamal.
All right. Oh, wow.
I'm going to write this down.
I'll go, I mean, this is all off the top. I wasn't prepared for this, but I'll go Jim Brown.
No, that's it. No.
Oh, I get one. Okay.
We're going to go around.
Is this contemporary people or
anybody?
The last hundred?
Okay. No, you got anybody.
So I'll go Jim Brown.
Okay, that's your one.
I'm going to go Flo Jo.
Okay.
Jack Roosevelt Robinson.
Okay. Now remember, we're trying to win this shit, right? Okay. Okay, my first is Jamal, my first is Jim Thorpe. Because I want an all-around, I'm trying to get great athletes.
Right.
Great athlete. Okay, so now is Jim Thorpe. Okay, Jamal, who's your second pick?
I'll go Wilt.
Who?
Wilt Chamberlain.
Oh, man. See, this is why I knew I should have gone first. Okay. All right, Wilt.
I'm going to go Eliud Kipchoge because he's hecka fast. I mean, he's got endurance, and he's like a very, like, spiritual guy. Like, he'd keep us going.
All right.
Ah, very good. Okay. Dave?
Althea Gibson.
Ah. Well,
That's another one of yours, right?
No. She's my second. Serena is my first.
All right. Serena from me.
All right. Who's your third?
My third, I'm going to go, I mean, I'm going to throw Jordan in there. Michael Jordan.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm trying to think. Oh, gosh. Let's go Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, you can't be mad at that.
Good name. No, because people, you know, when you think about this kind of competition where it's going to be really grueling, you know, but that's okay. But
he withstood a lot of punishment.
Yeah.
Here's mine. The winner and still champion, Joe Louis.
Okay. Now, I would take my third. I would take Tom Brady. Now, let me show you why Tom Brady. Because there are no rules in this, and you don't know the competition. I got to have one person who will do fucking anything to win. Who will do anything to win.
That qualifies.
He'll deflate the ball.
Whatever the shit calls for, he will get it done. So we're there to think about how we're going to do this. He'll come up with some shit. The damn town, that's really fucked up. Hey, y'all want to win? So Tom Brady is my third.
All right, who you got, Jamal?
I'm gonna come a little more contemporary. I'm gonna go Allen Iverson, pound for pound.
I'm gonna go Simone Biles.
Ooh, oh wow, that's a good one. That's a good one.
All right, Bill, here you go. Edson Arantes de Nascimento, better known as Pelé.
Nice.
Oh,
that's a good one.
Nice.
That's a good one. That's a good one. Now, see, it's funny you get beat by your own. Jamal took two of my, you took Brown. That kind of really took the air out of the window.
Same here. I always got to, yeah.
Right.
But now, because swimming is a big part of this, there's going to be some water involved in this. I'm taking Michael Phelps. I don't know of who of your people can swim.
So I'm going to take Joe Frazier, that's for sure.
I'm gonna go. I haven't picked a woman yet. I'm gonna go Jackie Joyner Kersee.
That's excellent. Okay.
Has someone chosen LeBron yet?
No.
Okay. No, I'm going to LeBron.
All right, Bill. Here and I'm gonna go with a swimmer too. Mark Spitz.
Mm.
Okay. They definitely cancel each other out.
Yep.
Okay. So what I'm going to do, my last one, I'm going to go with Kobe. Because I think Kobe is probably a great athlete.
I got one. For my last choice?
We already got a five.
Already have five?
But give us your honorable mention.
Yeah, who's your sixth man, sixth person?
Deion Sanders.
Yes, I was thinking it.
That'd be great.
Yes, yeah. I forgot about Deion.
Deion was great.
Bo Jackson can be up there too.
Bo, you know, somebody, we did this exercise. Somebody mentioned, how come I mentioned Bo? It's funny who comes to mind. It's funny when you can open up the generations, who comes to mind? Who would you take into an alley fight with you?
Oh, my God. Sonny Liston.
You know, Sonny. I don't know if he was an athlete, but Andre the Giant.
No, I wouldn't do that.
That's a big
Andre.
Yeah. He's huge.
He's got,
I don't know.
as my man James Loft says, he has short area quickness. He'd be good for half a step here and there.
Right. That, you know. Exactly.
But if you got away from me, he would not be useful to you as a group.
Before we get out of here, Dave, I wanted to talk to you about this subject. I know it's you know, close to your heart. Obviously, you're one of the great all-time play-by-play guys, radio guys, but you're currently only you're the only full-time Black play-by-play commentator in baseball. Does that frustrate you when you're around the country? You know, how do you absorb that? How do you take that in?
Well, I try to go by the Joe DiMaggio line. Why do you play so hard every day? He says, because somebody's seeing me for the first time. I try to live by that. And what I like to see, and I'm not trying to take anybody's job away, but what I like to see other lead play-by-play guys on radio and TV who happen to be African-American? Absolutely. I think I'd written down a list. I think in the history of and this is unofficial, but I think I'm real, real close to it. In the history of Major League Baseball, lead TV announcers who are black, Paul Olden, Bill White, Billy Sample did for – he was a second banana. Ken Singleton did more, you know, fill-in than it's Greg Gumbel and me in the history of baseball and TV. That's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. And again, it goes back to the disaffectation black folks have had for baseball probably the last generation and a half. When you and I were coming along, it was baseball, it was football, it was boxing. And, you know, not that many folks play baseball now. Travel leagues cost 5 to 10 large a summer. So, and then we don't have the great father-son connection that we used to have, handing the sport down, which is a big problem. And football and basketball kicking our butt in terms of promoting their guys and their sport. I mean, love Mike Trout, best player we have in baseball, but he just wants to play. He doesn't want to get out there and, you know, sell his brand and be an advocate for, you know, for coming to play the game. Or, you know, Ken Griffey's retired. He's still the major domo, major factor of most of the cats that are playing right now, but we need more guys like that. We only have 7% out of, 750 guys who are African-American. We have 10 of them on our 40-man roster with the Seattle Mariners right now, if we can get underway this season, which is encouraging. But, yeah, I don't dwell on it, but when people ask me about it, it makes you a little heartsick.
You know, the talent is out there. You know, there are, you know, people want to do it. What kind of advice do you give, you know, to a young?
A lot of guys, you know, you got to get out there. Yeah, I need you to speak the language. I need you to be as a pretty clean liver. Stay out of page six. Be able to speak the language. Conjugate your verbs. Ask is when you ask a question, you're not asking a question. Right. You got to know the history of the game. You got to be willing to work ridiculous hours. You're not going to be able to be, as one of my aunts used to say, not going to be able to go out and finger pop all the time. Was it Junior Walker, shake and finger pop? Remember that Junior Walker in the All-Stars, Bill? You got to stay on the straight and narrow, man, because you're representing a team, you're representing a region. And, you know, you just can't be, you know, you just cannot be generating 3 a.m. phone calls. And you got to be able to walk into a room and command it and get to know everybody. You have to be a people person. You got to be willing to work long hours. And the other thing, I tell kids all the time in high school and college, you better get an internship, because all white kids are getting internships up the wazoo, man, especially in the upper, the one percenters, they dominate in that. And we have got to get our folks in there to get those kinds of opportunities. And the numbers are better, a lot better now. Say, Bill, remember when we were starting out, Larry, the great Larry Whiteside had the list. All right, Sims, you made the list of the black reporters at major metropolitan dailies covering sports. And the list might've been 25, 30 guys, if it was that many. We got a heck of a lot more, but I've just compiled a list and I'll send it to you guys of the folks who are broadcasting that I've seen so far in college football, basketball, NFL and baseball. It's a short list, man. It really is. So, you know, once you get there, you want to make the most of it. And the guys that are doing it are doing a hell of a job.
The struggle continues.
Amen.
I know you work with kids. Can you almost, I guess we had talked this before, you know, like they, you know, created the Roden Fellows at the undefeated with the idea of, you know, creating some kind of pipeline to get young black kids, I chose HBCUs, into the pipeline. I wonder if you could have like the Dave Sims fellowship or something to get three young black play-by-play kids at least into the kind of pipeline.
I am more than willing to do that if you can, as we know, it's who you know more than it is what you know. If you can put me in touch with the right people, I'll gladly do that. I would love to do that. And before I got the marriage out, my wife and I used to do media coaching for D1 athletes and some pros. We did the Nets. Why it's important to know how to deal with the media, what the media wants from you, what do you have to do to perform, to to promote your brand, you know, sit up straight, stay up, good body language, good tone in your voice. You're going to get negative questions. Know how to react to, you lost five in a row. Don't snap at somebody and have tape that's going to live forever. I mean, there's a whole, we did a whole seminar and we did that for about 7-8 years before I got the Mariner job and it shut that down. But I would love to do it. I mean, if you got some folks that you can put me to, or we can go in together and get some dollars together and get some, and I'm sure there's some cats, there's got to be some cats at HBCUs or, and I know, yeah, when I hear from Power Five schools, I would love to do that. Absolutely.
The HBM Play-by-Play Academy. It could happen.
It could happen. Make it happen.
Play-by-Play Academy. And you know, key is not to, you can't save the world, but if, right, you, if you can take three.
So we're at,
hey, but listen, I know everybody's got to run. We got a really schedule. You know, everybody's got things to do. Plays.
I gotta go run the streets, Bill.
No. I'm good. I got some more time. Well, no, I know you got to go. Hey, no, but this is great. So, Aaron, just before we really do leave, seriously, you know, Aaron's got a new job, right? Can we talk about your?
Sure.
Is that? Aaron's now with CNN, and she's a producer. So, Aaron, nice. Just kind of how it's going his first couple of weeks? How's going with me? You not me?
It is definitely a different world, and I miss Bill, but I get to call him every day still, so it's good. No, it's totally different. I'm working as an associate producer for pretty much a new audio team. Like almost everyone is new to the team. We've got, and we're covering three different podcasts. I'm doing one on coronavirus, and kind of like the public health perspective. There's a political one called The Daily DC. And then there is another show called, The Boss Files with Poppy Harlow. And so, yeah, it's just kind of like, the coronavirus show is a daily show, so it's a totally different pace than I'm used to. So, you know, Dave, when you said, you know, you have to be willing to work long hours and just, yeah, exactly. Like, I do one show a week and I'm up till like 1:30. I just have to be like ready for that. But then we do get a time off the next day, so that's good. But it's really fun. I am one of three Black people on the team. I'm the only Black American. The other two are immigrants. One's from Uganda. One's from Nigeria. Both American, but born elsewhere.
You said The Daily DC. I have you on my podcast. Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I didn't realize that was you. Okay. That's nice. Yeah. That's good stuff.
You never know, Aaron.
You never know.
Right.
So I'm. Yeah. So that's my team. I've been working on the coronavirus fact versus fiction, but we do. Yeah.
Nice. Good for you.
Yeah. That was cool. And I have to give Jamal a shout out. The latest show on Boss Files was about Kevin Love, and I had to help put together some questions, and I picked Jamal's brain, and so he was very helpful. Thank you, Jamal.
Anytime.
Well, that's very, very good, very encouraging. Aaron, we're looking forward to bigger and tremendous things. I like the one you did on dating, was it dating? Oh, and
dating from a social distance.
Yeah, that was very good.
Thank you.
All right, well, hey, everybody. Yeah, that was great. That's great. This has been fun as usual. You know, looking forward to the next episode of The Last Dance.
Yes.
The NBA draft tonight. I'm not sure if I could do another.
Oh, wait, can I give Bill? We got to give you a shout out. You just did a whole show on what happens after the draft and really taking a deep dive into what the NFL regular season will look like and what it will take to pull it off for Arizona State.
Where we do that? Oh,
at the Global Sport Institute with ASU.
Bill
spoke to the former vice president of the Packers and Andrew Brandt, and the former wide receivers coach for the San Diego Chargers when they were San Diego, James Lofton. He also was in the NFL. They had a really good conversation. I personally think, no shade to Roger Goodell, but I think they actually shared so much more than I've gotten from his sound bites lately.
Right.
James Lofton's my man, the Hall of Famer. That's a good guy to go to. My man.
Yeah, Aaron actually produced that segment. That's
nice.
You know. When is it going up, by the way, Aaron?
It's up. It was up yesterday.
Oh.
Yeah, I was promoting it today.
Good. See, tell me. Everybody, listen, everybody be safe. Stay happy, stay up, stay positive. Hug someone. And if you don't have one, invent one.
Yeah, right. You know.
All right, everybody. Dave Sim, the great Dave Sim.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you all.
Yeah, thank you.
You're very welcome. All right, my pleasure. Thank you.
Mom, take care.
Stay strong.